course.
Blog Talk Radio.
I got a letter from the government the other day. I opened and read it and burned that. Man, the way that I live don't concern that. Man, we gon' have to settle this another way. A letter from the government the other day. I opened and read it and burned that. Man, the way that I live don't concern that. Man, we gon' have to settle this another way.
Movement, music, move into it. Put a fist up, prove it to us. This is much more than music to us. This is beauty and strength. And if you know about the music, then you know about life. This is movement, music, move into it. Put a fist up, prove it to us. This is much more than music to us. This is beauty and strength. And if you know about the music, then you know about life.
Word is
any kind of activity that takes place on the floor of the Congress or the Senate, that's the government. Any kind of dilly-dallying, that's the government. Any kind of pussyfooting, that's the government. Any kind of act that's designed to delay, or deprive you and me right now of getting full rights, that's the government that's responsible. And any time you find the government involved in a conspiracy,
turn, I can never go back. Life without parole, upstate, shackled and trapped. Living in the hole, looking at the world through a crack. Fuck that, I'd rather shoot it out and get clapped. I've gone too far, there ain't no coming back for me. Auschwitz gas chamber full of Zyklon B. Just like the Spanish exterminating Tainos, raping the black and Indian women, creating Latinos. Motherfucker, upmade me out of self-righteous hatred. And now you got yourself a virus, stuck in the matrix. A suicide bomber, strapped and ready to blow. Lethal injection, strapped down, ready to go. Don't you understand, they'll never let me live out in peace. Concrete jungle, guerrilla war out in the streets. Nat Turner with the sickle, pitchfork and machete. The end of the world, motherfucker, are you not ready?
DJ Tony Drake.
This is DJ Tony Drake, aka Mr. Top Shelf himself, and right now you're in tune to Your World News, where journalism and activism are not mutually exclusive, here on yourworldnews.org.
You can't tell me life was meant to be like this. A black man in a world dominated by whiteness. Ever since the Declaration of Independence, we've been easily brainwashed by just one sentence. It goes, all men are created equal. That's why corrupt governments kill innocent people. With chemical warfare, they created crack and AIDS. Got the public thinking these were things that black folks made. And every time there's violence shown in the media, usually it's a black thing. So where are they leading you? To a world full of ignorance, hatred and prejudice. TV and the news for years they affected this foolish notion that blacks are all criminals, violent lowlifes, and then even animals. I'm telling the truth, so some suckers are fearing me, but I must do my part to combat the conspiracy.
Welcome to another edition of Your World News, UNITV Media Collaboration, shot and filmed and recorded right here on the campus of the University of Maryland, College Park. I'm your host, Solomon Kamajan, and I am joined by two other hosts, Kai and Dara, right? Yeah. We're going to hit the ground running, as we always do, but this is, I like to say every show is special, but this is really important, significant, especially in the times that we live in. Where, you know, it seems that, black history and even indigenous people's history continues to be methodically and like purposely pushed to the margins or suppressed. There's attacks on it. We've had previous shows where we talked about critical race theory and which is, basically, real history. It's another way of saying, real history that is suppressed. So where we are in the midst, the onset of 2024 Black History Month, which as we know with Carsey Woodson, when he created, Negro History Week, he was never alive to see Black History Month. But when he created Negro History Week in 1926, he created it as a tool to, as a resource and as something that would help Black people of African ancestry launch into year-round studies and exploration of of Black history, not just Black history of you know, Black people within, you know, the United States or the Western Hemisphere, but throughout the entire globe. I mean, that this is what the man said himself, and, you know, I really implore people to read The Miseducation of the Negro, really important book that, you know, you can still purchase, you know, online in many, many different places. But we're gonna get into this. This was a show that Kai and Dara decided that, you know, they thought it was a good idea to have a show on this, and you know, I co-sign on you know, their idea. So I think it's an excellent idea from the two of them, and so we're gonna start. But I have to give them the, you know, the platform to introduce themselves to you, and then we'll go. And I'll, ladies first.
Okay, just to reintroduce myself. Hello, my name is Dara Somerville. I'm a sophomore finance major, and yeah. So today we just want to talk about or just share some facts and history that, you know, some people may know, but the greater majority might not be familiar with. So we just want to shed light on that, so that we're all kind of familiar with this information.
Yes, and I'm Kai Bradner. I'm a senior public policy major, so this is my last semester. So I'm super excited for the future, but I'm also really happy to be back with everyone here and discussing this really important topic. So as we say, you know, Black History Month is a really big deal. And there's so much history that I feel like often just like not talked about, just really not known by the general public. Like Carter G. Woodson, I didn't really know who that was until I did research. And I'm like, wow.
Yeah.
Now he's the second Black man from Harvard to his PhD and then created the Negro Week, and now we have Black History Month.
Yeah.
And I like, not really talked.
And spent a lot of time right here in the DMV, you know, especially in Washington D.C. And he taught at Howard University. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. So this was your idea. I'll let you guys start off. You know, I have, you know, some you know, segments out that, you know, when it's my turn to talk, but I'll let you, you know, Kai, you can go ahead and you know, kick, you know, get us started.
So the reason that we wanted to do this topic, as we said, is kind of, you know, to spread more knowledge and also empower other Black people like ourselves. Because, you know, a big part of, you know, education is, you know, Black liberation and just trying to, you know, not only learn about like regular math stuff, but also learn about who we are and what we do and what we have done, and just, you know, build more community, and that collective energy is what's really needed to like really uplift the upcoming generations. That's kind of our job in a sense. But yeah, so how we did, I think we split between, you're handling more of like the artsy side, and I'm doing more of like, you know, the STEM.
Artsy and like entertainment.
Yeah. And so, as I did, I want to start with Carter G. Woodson, but we already touched on that a little bit. But I'll move to my next person I want to talk about is William Tucker. And he was the first African-American born in America in 1624, in like, the colonies. Like, I'm blanking on which colony it was, so I can find that in a second. But, I mean, I have no idea who William Tucker was to this day. And he was pretty much, I guess, the beginning, quotation marks, of the African-American experience. And I just think that should be dwelled more into his life and should be celebrated and appreciated, because I'm sure during that time it wasn't fun at all. It's probably extremely hard, and now look at us, who we are today. So, we'll piggyback.
Yeah, we can just go back and forth.
Yeah.
Okay, so the first person or pioneer kind of I want to talk about is a filmmaker called Oscar, I believe it's Michel, and just, he was just like a groundbreaking African-American man who was around during like the 20th century, and then he wrote and directed like directed and produced, excuse me, like over 40 films, and I just feel like not many people know that. I know I didn't know that, and I'm really into like films and watching like dramas and just other different genres like that, but I didn't know that like he worked as like showing or producing like, or no, in his work, like he shows like significant like challenges and like racial stereotypes from like the 1919 to like 1948, I believe. And then like he showed how African American life was portrayed during that time within the film industry, which of course during that time was largely segregated. And so like some of his movies, just for example, it's like Murder in Harlem, which was 1935. That movie was filmed 1935. Within Our Gates, which was 1920, The Homestead was 1919, and then enough to show and portray life as an African-American during those early encounter times.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure during that time, it was hard to get recognition.
Yeah.
Even now, it's really hard in the industry, because we talk about...
And even there's, often stolen work and stuff
yeah.
like that. People don't recognize
yeah.
who does what.
Exactly.
And not even just
yeah.
with film, with music, too, with
mm-hmm.
art, there's a lot of stolen everything, fine art, everything.
Yeah.
But I just think it's so unfortunate that there's not... Sorry, my head is going, because I'm thinking about all these, artists who've gotten anything stolen from them, their work stolen from them, no credit, and then you see, for example, a white man famous. So one person I thought of that my mind was just racing about was, Elvis.
Mm-hmm.
How he just stole, and it's, all his music, it wasn't even originally from him, but
yeah.
people don't recognize.
Yeah. No, you're exactly right, and even, looking at Thomas Edison, and other white, quote unquote inventors, everything that they've been credited with as an invention has not
yeah.
been such. Some of the stuff derived from them, and the other things, you had, folks of color, black men who, created things, and the patent was stolen. They went and they saw the idea and went ahead. Went to the patent office and claimed it as their own, before the show started, Kai and I were talking about, for instance, Louis Latimer, who improved on Edison. He created the filament that goes into the light that allows the light bulb to shine, more, brightly and so forth. And, I just wanted, one person I wanted to touch on was a few as we go around. The late great Maurice Bishop, who was from Grenada. Maurice Bishop was a revolutionary leader in the small island nation of Grenada, and he was summarily assassinated with the help of the United States government. They saw him as a threat, because he had socialist leanings, and at a time when Grenada was importing a lot of their agriculture, and he said, listen, we have this beautiful bounty of land, and we have a tropical climate. We need to be, growing our own fruits and vegetables, our own crops, and producing and manufacturing, here. We don't need to be, dependent on other folks for so much stuff. And he was the founder of something called the New Jewel Movement, which was, a political organization that was, that was geared towards uplifting the masses of people within Grenada. And it should be no surprise to people that Grenada is a predominantly black country. And Ronald Reagan, and the U.S. government targeted him. This is where you have the advent of gunboat diplomacy, where they went in and they sent the Marines in to, invade the island. He was summarily, assassinated by, political adversaries within that country that were supported by the United States government. And, Maurice Bishop, people should definitely Google him if they've never heard of him. He was very, very much a Pan-African, came and spoke at Hunter College in New York City. And, looked at, that when we all rise, regardless of where we're from, that as black people, as African people, that we all benefit from that, and then we have a duty to support one another.
Yeah. Okay, and then moving back to, entertainment, music, and television. So I actually learned this in my music class last year, and it was just, a little fact. So it's with hip-hop and stuff. And so, our first godmother of hip-hop, but her name was Sylvia Robinson.
Yes.
And so I was kind of familiar with it because my dad definitely listened to Sugar Hill Gang.
Mm-hmm.
But I was just like, wow, I didn't know. First, I didn't know there was a woman behind all of that, but I just I liked the history behind that. It was with Rapper Dwight as well as...
The Message. She's also behind The Message.
The Message, yes.
Yeah.
So I was like, wow. And then even the first black American TV show host was Nat King Cole, which that is my favorite artist, so I'm very familiar with him. And then even with Hattie McDaniel in the early 1940s, she became the first black person to win an Oscar, and she played her role in Gone with the Wind, which I'm also familiar with from my mom. And then 24 years later, Sidney Poitier, became the first black man to win an Oscar for his leading role in New Eyes of the Field. And,
I feel like all those facts are still relevant today. Because it brings me back to the conversation around, you know, Album of the Year at the Grammy.
Yeah.
You know, I believe since only four black women have ever won, and the last one was Lauryn Hill.
Yeah, it was like 25.
That's
great.
There's so many great albums that have been out. And I just feel like, you know,
I definitely think it's rigged.
It's sad to see. It's like so much hard work. And I think it was a quote a little while ago. I don't remember where it stems from right now, but it's like, it was saying that, you know, black people, they can't be mediocre. They have to go up and above.
Yeah.
They have to get to the same place where, you know, another person could be from the beginning. And it just goes to show, no matter how hard you work, like that recognition from, you know, like the mainstream media is not, won't always come.
Yeah.
That's so interesting because I was just having a conversation with my mom about, like, just entertainment in general and who the viewers are mainly, or who it's mainly made for, like who picks what. Even speaking with sports, I know it's a little off topic, but just like seeing how things are run and even going down to actually like the whole Taylor Swift thing, like she's being shown times, but for whose entertainment, because it's not ours.
Yeah.
And it's very obvious, like those fans, okay, people are tired of seeing her on the media, like it's just being too consistent. And even with shedding light on herself and taking away a little of the, like, the joy and excitement and just gratefulness by announcing, like, her whatever album.
It was so disrespectful. It's not like they're a fan. They're peers.
This is not for you. Like,
yeah.
This is for everybody to enjoy this moment, and you kind of took it upon yourself to announce that, hey, I still have this, like, sorry, but mediocre, like, album that it's just so interesting how I kind of got into, like, thinking about so many conspiracy theories about just the entertainment industry and who runs it, and like it's rigged.
Like she won an award and literally announced her album. Like,
it
that's the no plan.
I want to thank to my fans who, like, on my however many years she's been out. Like, I used to love Taylor. Like, that was my girl. But it's gotten so much as like a cult, and then also thinking that you're better than everyone, where it's not even like, this is not your space. You came into a space that it's like, okay, now enjoy it, but you can enjoy it or you can enjoy it with the people you want to, but don't take it away from everybody else. The focus on
And moving back to the sports aspect, I know there's so many headlines to Taylor Swift, and I saw one that was like, Taylor Swift bringing back swag surfing in the stands. Like, what are you talking about?
That song was already popular.
And then also know that there's been a lot of talk over a designer, a clothes designer, who makes jackets with, like, NFL logos. And it was talked because one of the NFL just approved this woman to be able to, you know, make these clothes, like, officially.
Yeah.
But going back, like decades ago, like, black women were trying to do that, and they were, like, you know, getting sued and stuff like that. So it goes to show, like, what's deemed as acceptable by, like, you know, mainstream.
But then even with mainstream stuff, such as, like, clothing and just different apparel and anything, actually, it's not even popular until you see black people wearing it. Truthfully, but I saw, like, on the internet the other day, nobody wants to acknowledge the fact that trends don't become trends until black people do them or wear them or say something. And it's just so
look how people talk and dress now. Cool and hip.
But then I don't like it because then, like, other people would over exaggerate, like, you know, what they're wearing, how they're speaking.
The blackness they put on. Like, you go somewhere in the school and listen to someone talk
like
you sound
tell
crazy.
Just from, like, them trying to sound like somebody they're not. It's just an imposter system. So annoying at this point.
Especially during Black History
Month. Oh my goodness, yes. Hello.
But that's why, like, this, for instance, you know, things like this, you know, shows like this and discussions mm-hmm. like this are so important, because that's a way of us, you know, reclaiming, as George Dames, the black historian, you know, wrote in his book called Stolen Legacy, reclaiming what is ours, you know, because otherwise, if we don't know the history, people, outsiders outside of our community can come in and they can claim stuff, and we'll go along with it because we don't know. So, for instance, you know, I'll jump in, you know, mm-hmm. looking at the, for instance, for the longest time, many, many, many kids in this country will go through their entire lives believing, going through, you know, believing, unless there's some type of intervention and someone stepping in and saying, no, young brother, young sister, no. You know, we created, black people, Africans created mathematics and chemistry and philosophy, you know, monotheism. You know, these are all things that were created by black people in the continent of Africa. There was a time, you know, three of the first universities mm-hmm. ever, you know, came, you know, on the planet came out of the continent of Africa. And this is at a time where, as we know, race is a social construct, you know, but ethnicity and people being from nation states, those are real things where Europeans would come into the continent of Africa and study from black men, at these universities that they called mystery schools, and they would study and they would learn mathematics and sciences and all those types of things, metallurgy, how to melt that if you heat up iron ore, you can melt it and you can shape it into things, you know, a sword, you can shape it into, you know, to plates and so forth. That advent comes out of the continent of Africa. The very first C-section was done in Uganda mm-hmm. thousands of years ago. I mean, think about this. This is amazing stuff. But if you don't know this, you know, and you go to a traditional, you know, school in this country, in the United States, or even outside the United States, you know, you're given a completely different narrative. They put themselves, they invoke themselves there. And then I'll end on this. Even the fact that if you go to med school, that you, when you finish med school, you're taking the Hippocratic Oath. Why would, you know, and the Hippocratic Oath is named after Hippocrates, who was a great physician from Europe, from Greece. But here's the thing. He was born 3,000 years after a black man in Africa named Imhotep died. And when Greece conquered, you know, Kemet, which is now known as Egypt, they, you know, they took annals from there, and those annals were brought back to Greece. And when Hippocrates was born, and later on, you know, when he became an adult, he studied from the one of those books, and that's why in his own words, he said, "I am a son of Imhotep. Much of what I've learned about medicine has come from the works of a great African man by the name of Imhotep." But so why aren't we taking the Imhotep oath? We're taking the Hippocratic oath because they don't want the image of a black man or a black woman being to be the father or the mother of contemporary modern day medicine of modern, you know. And so these are things that we have to learn and study and then pass on to others, especially mm-hmm. the generations that are coming behind us.
No, definitely piggyback off of that. And we'll talk about Rebecca Lee Crumpler, who's the first black woman to get her MD and become a doctor. And now, like, I had
where'd she go?
She went to New England Female Medical College.
Okay.
That was 1864.
Wow.
Yeah, and I just never, we don't really,
I didn't know
the names
that
really brought, not talked about. And I think major deal making, you know, high roads in those industries that at that time were such, like, white male dominated. And it's the perseverance and just the strive to be successful, not just for herself, but to help others is really motivating and really impressive. And that's why I'm really happy we're talking about this.
What was her name again?
Rebecca Lee Crumpler.
Crumpler?
Yeah.
With a C?
Yes.
Thank you for that. Yeah, I didn't know that. Wow.
Yeah. And then going kind of off that is, I was talking about George Washington Carver, who I'm sure we all know as a peanut man. Mm-hmm. And I remember studying him in school and finding everything he's done so fascinating.
Exactly. But, 300 uses of the peanut and the sweet potato and the pecan. Yeah.
And he's done so much. Cooking oil is like 300 inventions. It's amazing. And not only that, just the way he revolutionized farming. He was, what, the leader of an organic, no more friendly type of farming. And, that, like, and all that's been kind of lost. And, you know, how we had struggled with maybe today and all the stuff you could learn. And it's just kind of like tough side or laws. And that's why discussions are so important.
Yeah. When you bring that real quick, everyone, you know, when you think of Detroit or Tennessee, places where they make cars, where cars are produced, we talk about them. They're called a plant. Mm-hmm. A lot of people don't know this, that he and Henry Ford became friends. Mm-hmm. They became friends, and because of his work with the plants, because when George Washington Carver, who was a botanist, when he would talk about the different compartments of a plant, when you dissect a plant, when you open up mm-hmm. a plant, a flower, that is where the term comes from, the plant. And so Henry Ford said, oh my gosh, that's brilliant. You know, we can have these assembly lines and conveyor belts mm-hmm. and these things, and this will be referred to as a plant. That whole idea comes from George Washington Carver. Yes, him and Henry Ford were friends. Yes. Okay. Yes.
Okay. I have something. So this one is kind of steering off of, like, you all direction and going more to, like, athletics and So actually the other day I learned this a little while ago, last week. But I'm kind of into, like, you know, Pilates. And even though I've been kind of steering away from traditional, like, running when you go to the gym, I usually do Pilates first and then cardio, but I learned that, like, there's a young lady called Kathy Grant, and this is during, like, the late 1950s, I'm sure, and she was actually kind of the main face for Pilates, as she was taught by another choreographer, I believe. I don't remember his name at the moment, but he was the one who taught her, like, the proper way or the correct way on, like, Pilates, how it helps your body, all the, like, the benefits from it, because she was a dancer herself, like a dancer choreographer, like all that jazz, and she was really good. So I just found that interesting, because in a lot of spaces now, Pilates is one of those things where it seems like it's mainly in white spaces. Mm-hmm. Like, if you go into, like, a studio or something, you've only seen, like, white people on the walls and in the pictures, like, being fit, being active, but it very much was from a black woman or by a black woman. So I just feel like there should be a lot more spaces where we just see images of ourselves so that we're able to feel comfortable mm-hmm. in whatever space that we walk into, and so we don't have to, like, because when we see an image of, like, say I'm seeing an image of, like, a really fit, like, white girl, and I'm like, yeah, that's what I want to look like, but I really don't. I want to look like myself, but I just want to look like Tony. I want to see somebody who looks just like me that I can look up to, because it's more achievable. More
ignore that.
It's more inspiring, and it's just, I think, all around better. So I just feel like that's just something I never would have learned if I just didn't take the time. But I'm glad I didn't even look it up and research some of that stuff.
You have a really great point of, like, you know, the whitewashing of the wellness. Like,
yeah, it's definitely whitewashed. There's a lot of things that I think are definitely whitewashed, but.
Because mm-hmm. I feel like when you go into, spaces like these, there's so much promotion of the wellness and all this stuff, but it becomes really expensive as well.
Yeah.
Like, exactly. Memberships for a nice Pilates class and just, like, better food, honestly, is just, you know, not really in the same spaces, you know.
Exactly. People,
like, you have food deserts.
Yeah.
And just, like,
yep.
It's just...
And food deserts, I feel like, is a bigger issue in and of itself, because mm-hmm. even though we're in this area, like, as of right now, like, College Park, there's food everywhere, but that's also a college town.
Mm-hmm.
But I've talked about this in a camp that I was in called Choose People, and we were able to meet a lot of people who spoke on food deserts, in which if you, it's like certain, like, urban-esque areas.
Yeah, yes.
That food deserts in, or you just realize it. If you go, like, even if you go south enough in Maryland,
mm-hmm.
you can see that there's food deserts. People have to drive, like, 30-plus minutes or
right.
A simple grocery store, but that's not even the fault of them. It's the fault of others not even putting that, or not wanting it to be accessible for them. And then at the same time, with inflation going up, that's gas, that's food, that's so much money going that people just aren't making enough to live on a day-to-day basis, which is so unfortunate.
And that's something I'm glad you brought that up, because you know, we need to like start shifting the dialogue, especially because of, as you guys both said, talk about food deserts, to cooperatives. And it's not, you know, this radical idea that has been done before. I mean, there's a brother in Los Angeles who he started a community garden, like in a black community in Los Angeles. I don't know if it's Compton or Watts, but there's a community garden that he started. And people can go, like they would, and plant, and then come and pick their own fruits and vegetables for free. And it may be like at a low cost now, but initially was done free. But those are the type of things, is that if we can start, like, even like, think about it. If Kai and I, you know, pooled our money and there was like a plot of land, we can then till the soil and start planting, and saying, you know, Kai, you and your family can come, you know, on these days and come, you know, and we can share the bounty. We can share what we've grown. We can, you know, plant it together. And then, you know, if you get people to buy in and kind of replicate that process, you can start feeding the community, because you go in these, you go to the indigent inner city communities, economically disadvantaged. They can't afford a Whole Foods. They can't afford, you know, but we can start to bring the produce to them. And I know that there have been this process. I know even in DC right now, there is a mobile organic fruits and vegetables van that goes around and provides, you know, folks from like Ward 7, Ward 8 with fruits and vegetables that are affordable. I think they can even use their WIC cards, you know, to purchase those things. But it's important because, it's about health and living long. And if people, you know, they only have the economic resources to go eat, you know, from the dollar menu at McDonald's on a daily basis, that is over time destroying their bodies. And especially if it's young kids over and over, when you're young, you can get away. But after a while, if you're eating that for years and years, that brings on a whole range of illnesses and terminal diseases, including diabetes and hypertension, high blood pressure, and so forth.
And then even in those areas, if that's what they're prone to, if that's what happens a lot of the time, then they're not going to be able to even get the help that they need, because you can't afford it. It's just so many factors that go into helping others that I feel like a lot of people should recognize and realize. And actually, it was so interesting. Last semester, I was taking a public policy course, and we started talking about, like, government assistance and, like, WIC cards, all that stuff.
Yeah.
And actually, like, half my class didn't even know what, an EBT card was, or that there was government assistance programs.
Really?
And I was just so surprised, because the lack of awareness within that in itself, it just, like, it, to me, I was like, okay, you're showing your privilege. It was.
My professor
was like, raise your hand if you use your privilege. Raise your hand if you acknowledge your privilege. And I was just so shocked, as one of the black girls in the class, there's only two. I was just like, okay, well, this is just an interesting topic. I sat in the back to see what everybody had, like what everybody's opinions were, because I'm just, at that point, I'm observing how unaware you are of many things in the world. And it's just, for lack of a better word, sad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's, wow.
Yeah. Wait, okay, so kind of steering back to, like, our entertainment I just kind of want to talk about Nina Simone.
Yes.
And so even though I don't want to say everybody, Nina Simone is, but you should know who Nina Simone is. I just feel like she was very outspoken, and I loved her, and she was a great advocate for civil rights. So, like, in her songs, like Mississippi Goddamn,
yes,
Pretty Young, Gifted, and Black, they became, like, kind of, like, anthems for the movement.
Mm-hmm.
They talk about, like, just this, in a different way, like, I don't know.
Yeah. No, seriously. Like, yeah. And that's part of our history. That's part of our legacy.
Yeah.
Like Bessie Smith and, Ma Rainey. I mean, these are black women like in the
Mary
blues area. Yeah. You know, speaking out. Yes. Mary Makeba from South Africa, who was at one time married to Stokely Carmichael slash Kwame Ture. Yeah, that's black people have a long legacy of using music to speak to a great number of injustices and what's going on societally at the time. Yeah.
Yeah. That's like, I really learned about her as I was a senior in high school because I was involved with like my school's African dance, so we did a show or Sankofa show on Nina Simone like longer performances on the Mariam Makeba and Nina Simone. So I really enjoyed like hearing their songs over and over, actually listening to the lyrics on the songs.
Yes,
taking it in.
That's important.
Studying and analyzing what they have to say. But I really like how black creators are. Black artists just using their music to talk about, like, a lot of the social injustice that happens. And even with, like, early rap music, like, that's what I feel like it's focused on, is talking, just making awareness of the struggles that happen. And now, I kind of do think it's changed, but you just have to find, like, those right artists in our present time who still speak on injustices or, rather than, like, bad stuff like tech money drugs, like
stuff. Yeah, like that. Right.
But then also, I kind of, it's not even Hidden Plain Sight, it's Hidden Figures, the movie about the untold story of the three African American women in mathematics. And even though we are familiar with that movie, I still am very intrigued. Like, I still love it to this day because I love math. Like, I just think that's so, but there was nobody, like, I didn't know you could look up to somebody in math. It's just something I didn't see as common, but they played really crucial roles with NASA during the early years in their space program. So I just feel like they need still more credit, even though, you know, they did movies, there was a whole bunch of premieres and stuff. I still think that was, it should be celebrated because it's still a big accomplishment.
Definitely.
I don't know. I just feel like it should be recognized a bit more. And then even with black creations, shifting a little bit to like animations and just in how our animation studios, like shows like Proud Family, Boondocks, Proud Family, which is on Disney, Boondocks, I want to say it's like HBO now, and then Craig of the Creek was on.
Oh, yeah. It's the cartoon.
Cartoon Network, I believe. No.
Yeah,
Cartoon Network, I think. But I kind of never saw it as, like, those were contributing to telling, like, diverse stories, like, in an animated world, but about the black community. I kind of just saw it as, you know, I was like, well, some of them as a children's show. But as I rewatch it, I'm rewatching them now, you can just see, like, they're talking about a lot of the social issues and activism and stuff like that. Even with Proud Earth Family, I really like that version of Proud Family.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just kind of speaking on like present day activities that I really enjoy.
That made me think of Little Bill.
Little Bill.
Yes.
They have lessons in between each storyline. I love that.
I really like the grandma.
That's like my guilty pleasure, still watching like those shows when I was a kid. But the lesson is different when you watch it again. I really enjoy just understanding that and seeing it from a different eye. Like I'm seeing it from my 19-year-old perspective rather than what, like, 3, 4? I don't know how old I was when I started watching Little Bill, but Gilligan Island, I watched that. I was trying to stay up and watch that. But it's just so, like, the history is there, like, the representation is there, but it's always shown, like, late at night, or it's not shown for a long time. Like, for example, going back to Gilligan Island, that would play at, like, 2 o'clock in the morning, 3 o'clock in the morning, but somehow my sister and I found that show and we loved it.
Yeah.
But once you look at it back, there's still, like, it's all they just have to wait. It's like everything that we want shown or, like, just expressed, it's there. It's not like it's not in the media. Well,
yeah.
Some things it's not in the media. We just have to wait for it. And I think the waiting game is so unpredictable because I'm not good waiting. I want things now. I want to see it now. I want to see the representation now. I want to see a difference and a change within these shows and
yeah.
who portrays certain roles. I want to see that now. So
yeah.
That's just in the entertainment.
Yeah. And I the same thing about Phyllis Wheatley. And
mm-hmm.
Phyllis
yes.
Wheatley, yeah, I don't know, all this talk of art.
Yeah.
And, like, her story is really, really amazing. How she was taken from West Africa. She
yeah.
was enslaved. And then she became a famous poet, first African American woman poet.
Yeah.
And during that time, being able to publish work is outstanding. And just
yeah.
also just goes to show just you know, how powerful art is, how powerful music, spoken words, written words, how that can translate to
no
you know, generations, centuries, and how we still resonate with that today. And as you're saying with the animation industry and how that still connects, another form of art, and how it can be hard to find representation, but when we do, it feels so special, it feels nice, and we even still go back and look at those shows.
Actually, going back to art, I like that you brought up that, and like portraits and paintings that like represent like a lot of times now. Faith Wrinkles was probably one of the first artist that I really recognize or learned about took the time to actually learn about, and that was maybe first or second grade, and we had to do a Black History Month project, and I was in love with her quilts,
mm-hmm.
and so, or like the art, the paintings, or her artwork with the quilts, and the storytelling through that, and so even as I was younger, you know, I saw it, I just thought, like, you know, it's cute, it's history, like, some things I understand, and my mom helped me understand. But even looking at her work now, I was talking about her the other day with my sister, and I'm just like, wow. Like, there's a deeper meaning in all these paintings, which I love. But it's just like, the beauty inside the painting, the beauty inside of that work
mm-hmm.
has a deeper meaning and message, and I just really adore that. Because
yeah.
Sometimes for me, things have to be put in a visual perspective.
Yeah.
So hearing stories about, you know, like killing or like
mm-hmm.
white dominance and like, or even coming together as a community for like dancing and clubs and stuff.
Yeah.
Does a really, really great job of putting that into a visual perspective for all of us to see, understand, and learn. And we could like take away from that.
Yeah.
I really, really enjoy it.
And another painter, I don't know if you heard of Carl Walker. She's a really, really amazing painter.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of her work is, you know, it depicts a lot of black pain, like
yeah.
trauma, but
yeah.
there's also beauty in that.
Oof.
But also, within that pain, it's okay to be uncomfortable and fit with those types of imagery. And I read an article about Carl Walker's work.
Oh,
and
you did?
Resonated with me. And it's really, really impressive. By it and for everyone to go.
Where did you publish it?
The Observer, UMD.
Okay.
UMD on campus.
Yeah.
It's like very
wow.
silhouettes and it's usually black and
oh,
white.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's really cool. Wait, is that in the museum? Maybe I saw
yeah.
something similar.
Yeah.
But, I don't want to see. It wasn't the portrait. That's really nice.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely have to look into that. And then, who else can we talk about? Oh, we could talk on... No, I... Not talk. I'm going to bring up the Harlem Renaissance.
Mm-hmm.
We all are familiar with it, but even I think it's so important to recognize figures such as like Winston Hughes and Dora Neale Hurston.
That's
one of my favorites.
They're well known for like their contributions to many of the black women artists, writers, and different musicians,
mm-hmm.
which they're often overlooked. And I just think it's important because even in this time, in our day and age, we kind of are more open to speaking about like LGBTQ+ community and voices, but there was a lot of a good amount of the African American community within that space was a part of that community. And figures like Bessie Smith,
yeah,
who is a poet like Angela Selena Wells Grimley,
okay,
who address issues of race and sexuality. They contributed to a complex narrative of that era, so I just kind of wanted to say something about that. Really, you know, for some people it could be uncomfortable, but I think it should be normalized a bit more.
That was good. Yeah. I don't know if you guys have heard of Gordon Parks, too. Gordon Parks was, you know, very famous, you know, photographer and, you know, really, you know, produced some iconic, you know, work during the, you know, civil rights era.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Gordon Parks, yeah, a legend, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, I think so this just makes me think of, like, the African-American History Museum.
Yeah.
And I just love going there and taking everything in, but you definitely can't do it in a day.
Mm-hmm.
But I just love how there's so many artists and inventors that are just in the museum, like,
yeah,
in the different sections of the museum,
yeah,
like, top to bottom. And we can just learn all about, like, people we don't know, even people we haven't named today.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, or people that we do know, like, let's just say, like, Michael Jackson, like, the Gap Band. Like, artists like that, there's always something new to learn from everybody. And it's, I really...
Yeah, the museum is amazing. The bottom floor, and the bottom floor is so heavy.
Yeah.
But it's really beautiful.
It's like, very emotional.
It takes you on a journey.
Yeah.
But the line is always long.
Yeah, it is.
But it's okay. It's okay. It's worth it. It's definitely worth it. And I understand why the line is long.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just like... In those spaces, it's just a whirlwind of emotions because, like, wow, if you start at the bottom, like, you know, it's very heavy, very deep, but you have to understand it and look at it from a different perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I even put myself in their shoes, and it makes me really sad that that's what we have to go through to get to where I am today.
Trauma.
Yeah, and it just makes me appreciate what I have, what we have, what we learned here. Yes, and even that UMD has opportunities to learn about, you know, hip-hop and other artists and jazz. Like, just think spaces that I wouldn't normally think to go into or, like, look a little bit deeper into. I'm really appreciative that our school, like, has those opportunities. So.
Definitely.
Yeah.
No doubt about it. You know, I know we have a little bit more than... you know, 10 minutes, to, you know, to go. And I wanted to actually, while we were, you know, before we close out, I wanted to play, you know, a song, you know, that really speaks volumes to, as we talked earlier, you know, probably about 15, 16 minutes ago, and we were talking about how African people, when I say African people, black people have a long history of using music to educate the masses, to educate our communities, even going back to the jump ups and the field hollers when our ancestors were picking cotton or picking indigo or picking fruit against their will, you know, in hot sun, 10, 12 hours a day, those field hollers and you know, and even, you know, on the chain gang, you know, were used as a medium to communicate, you know, to communicate and to try to, like, uplift, push through this. But sometimes even communicating, like, this is our clarion call, our rallying crawl to uprise, as we saw with the Stoner Rebellion in South Carolina. So I want to play this song because it speaks volumes to black history, and this is none other than KRS-One, and the song is called You Must Learn. And as, when it's done, we'll, Kai and myself and Dara will close out.
Yo, man, they just suspended me, boo. Where are they suspended the teacher? Yeah, man, I'm getting so sick of this, man. They teaching us about nothing, man. You know what the bottom line is for black people out here? It's quite simple. You must learn. Let me demonstrate the force of knowledge. Knowledge reigns supreme. The ignorant. mean when you say I'm rebellious? Cause I don't accept everything that you're telling us. What are you selling us? A creator dwelling us. I sit in your unknown class while you're failing us. I failed your class cause I ain't with your reasoning. You're trying to make me you by seasoning it. My mind with DJ and run. See John walking a hardcore New York. Come on now, that's a chocolate cow. It doesn't exist, no way, no how. It seems to me that in the school that's ebony, African history should be pumped up suddenly, but it's not. And then you've got to stop. See spot run, run, get spot, insulting to a black mentality, a black way of life or a jet black family. So I include with one concern that you must learn. History, deal with straight up facts. The history teach the student what needs to be taught. Since black and white kids both take short. When one doesn't know about the other one's culture, ignorance soups down like a vulture. Cause you don't know that you ain't just a janitor. No one told you about Benjamin Banneker, a brilliant black man that invented the almanac. Can't you see what KRS is coming at? Well, Eli Whitney, Holly Selassie, Graham Bill Woods made the walkie talkie. Louis Latterman, Ruben Edison, Charles Duke, did a lot for medicine. Garrett Morgan made traffic lights. Harriet Tubman freed the slaves at night. Matter of CJ Walker to make a straightening comb. But you won't know this if you weren't shown. The point I'm getting at, it might be harsh. It's we're just walking around brainwashed. See what I'm saying? It's not to diss a man. We need the 89 school system. One that caters to a black return because you must learn.
That was none other than the inimitable KRS-One, one of the great hip hop artists of all time, and that was You Must Learn, KRS-One. Well, as we have our closing comments, I'll go first, and I just want folks to understand that Carter G. Woodson created Negro History Week in 1926 as to be used as a platform to launch us, like a trampoline, to launch us into the exploration of our history, of black history, African history, Africana studies, throughout the entire year. And I say don't read books, don't read articles, study them, underline, study the information. Don't just be kind of one of these bougie people that has books on their coffee table that they've never read before, and they just have it there to impress their dates or their friends, a bunch of books that, just for show and tell. No, study them. In 1976 is when it became Black History Month, there is a long, rich history. And as you study Black history, you will then start to find out and see, oh my gosh, this is stuff that these folks have been taking credit for. And I've been told a lie that nothing good came out of Africa, but human life came out of Africa. All right. The first human beings, and as you study, you'll learn, even the first Europeans were black because, this is even a longer story, but white folks have been around for 6,000 years. It took a while for their bodies to adapt to the lack of sunlight and the cold in Europe. But these are things that are scientifically proven. They're scientifically proven, and no legitimate scientist, biologist, anthropologist would ever refute what I'm saying here, because it is an absolute fact. And so study your history. Even if you're not black, study black history, study African history, because it is world history and is vastly important. And as you do that, study indigenous people's history, Native American history, and the history of people of color that has been suppressed for literally generations. I'll stop there and I'll turn it to one of you guys.
So I think you said it great. I just want to kind of thank you all for listening today, because I just think that, like, as we learn, you learn from each other. Like, you learn something new every day. Nobody knows everything. So I just feel like it's just an important conversation to talk about, or one of the important conversations that we do talk about. And,
yeah. I would also like to thank everyone for listening. This is always, you know, highlight of my week, you know, great time to talk and just feel proud of who we are.
Yeah.
And, of course, learning about Black history cultivates, you know, Black collectivism, which leads to Black liberation, and can help us map the cycle of poverty and kind of re-enter structural racism, hopefully.
Yeah.
I think these conversations like this, you know, help start those conversations that need to happen, you know, empower one another and each other who are listening. And so, thank you.
No problem.
Happy Black History Month.
Happy Black History
Month. That's right. That's right. Until next time, you've been watching, you know, next time will be in 2 weeks from now. Thanks for tuning in. We really appreciate it. And that is a wrap.